Good morning. We'd like to call over the House Committee on Transportation. It's April 23rd, 1999. Janet, would you bring us up to date on any of the information we have before us before we get into our public hearing?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There's the bills and staff member summaries for each of the bills today, and there's one fiscal analysis for HCR 59. At the bottom of your stack is the list of measures that have had one hearing in the committee, even the ones that have just had a tap-in hearing. This is not all the best for transportation, but the ones that have had one hearing are today.
What this means is, effective Monday, these are the bills that still have a life, but they may not work.
And there, at the end of the list are the Senate bills that have been referred to the committee as of yesterday. And there is a dash two amendment that was just received this morning for House Bill 3465.
Thank you. For the benefit of the audience, we need one more member for a quorum, but we find out if we get started and they hear us, they come on down. The meeting has started. Now they will come down. So what we will do, we have about four bills that we need to have a quick public hearing on. See that? with all respect, thank you, sir, for being here. We will have the public hearing on these four bills, and we don't anticipate any testimony on the four bills. If you're here for testimony, we will have testimony at a later date if that's okay with the body that is here. What I'm trying to say is we're tapping these in, trying to save them. We're open to the public here on House Bill 2527. Janet, could you give us a very brief rundown on what that bill is?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2527 would require a permit for the use of studded tires.
Thank you. This is one of the representatives on the committee's bill, so we thought we'd try to get to save it. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2527. We're public hearing on House Bill 3508.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3508 would require the Department of Transportation to put a traffic signal at the Pilot Corporation's facility in Ontario, Oregon.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion? We'll close the public hearing on 3508. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 3303.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3303 would increase the number of motor vehicle disabled veterans may register. They get a free registration plate. They don't have to renew it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We do have the representative here. Would you be comfortable coming back to the public hearing on this at a later date? You may be here for another bill, I believe. Anyhow, thank you. We'll close the public hearing on 3303. We'll open the public hearing on 3418.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3418 would authorize disabled person parking permits to programs that transport persons with mental impairments.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Law. We will close the public hearing on 3418. Thank you very much. Thank you, committee, for bearing with us. Now we'll get down to business.
I have one question. Just for, I suppose, point of discussion. We have 40 bills here now on this list, and we have 1 week to hear 40 bills. So how do we go about making sure?
You want to read my list?
Which one of these is the most important, and how are you going to figure out which of these bills are going to carry out of this place?
That's my job. Out of courtesy to the committee, I'm letting you know what is only still alive. If there's one to die for, please let me know. But it better not be studded tires. Other than that bill, we will pursue any of these. There will not be enough time to hear all these. We are not going to have a nighttime meeting. We've been in session for over 3 months, and any of these last-minute bills should have been here a long time ago if they were serious. They call them priority bills. If it was a priority, they should have introduced it in January.
That's not long ago. I did, sir.
I tell you, that's the answer. Thank you for asking. This is a courtesy so you know what is still in committee.
Yeah.
And we'll keep you all up to date. Any other questions? Thank you. Welcome to public hearing on House Bill 3465. We have three items on the agenda, and we will try our best to follow the agenda. And we will get all three items done. And the next session is at 10:30, and I'd like to be out here at 10 or before. Thank you. Janet, could you give us a brief rundown on 3465?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3465, the original bill, and I understand that there are two amendments that completely replace the original bill, but just briefly, the original bill would have allowed the Department of Transportation in any county to establish an intergovernmental road maintenance entity by agreement. It specified that the entity would be jointly governed by the ODOT regional manager and the county public works director, and would specify that employees would be assigned to the entity, but would remain employees of either the Department of Transportation or the county. Mr. Chair, you heard at the beginning of session and during the interim about Jackson County and ODOT working together under formal and informal intergovernmental agreements to share work, equipment, and personnel. And under these agreements, they have performed a number of joint projects as well. In 1998, a formal feasibility study was completed which investigated the issues related to an actual merger going beyond the intergovernmental agreements to an actual merger. The study noted the benefits and drawbacks to proceeding toward merger and also noted the barriers to merger. Mr. Chair, the Dash 2 amendments would create an interim committee further that looking into this issue and some of the policy questions, especially related to personnel. Mr. Chair, that's...
Okay, thank you very much. We have two representatives from the south part of our state. Thank you for being here. By the way, since this is a committee, and before we get started, we do have another item placed before you. Appreciate it if you could fill this out and get it in. It's the evaluation of the administrator. And I think he's a pretty good job, but I'm lobbying for it.
Chairman, if she's willing to buy us all lunch, it might have some impact on the evaluation. You know.
I'll pay for the lunch. Thank you both for being here. Appreciate it very much.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Judy Werbelow, and I'm the representative for District 52. I'm very pleased to be a part of this bill. It is a not only a bipartisan effort, but it is also an effort among all the people who are affected by this, the different agencies, Jackson County, ODOT, the workers, and so forth. What the Dash 2 amendments will do, since we discussed and had meetings, we felt like maybe we were putting the cart before the horse, and there were still things that needed to be studied and worked out, and so that's why the Dash 2s, which creates a task force, which then is charged with coming back before the next legislature with ideas and implementing legislation as to what options we may choose.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm State Representative Rob Patridge. I represent House District 50, which is the city of Medford, also in Southern Oregon. I'm glad to be here with Representative Erbelow. The reason this bill was originally brought before this committee was the fact that as we look at looking at cost efficiencies across the board in state government and also looking at ODOT specifically, who's come under a lot of scrutiny recently, there's been a great working relationship and partnership in Jackson County that's occurred as a result of saving some of the resources there by working together. So you're not driving over a county road to get to a state highway that ODOT would manage, and just driving over, you can stop along the way and fix potholes or do whatever needs to be done. It's a way to look at this from an efficiency standpoint. There, because of the various union agreements that are there, as well as the management issues, this task force idea is what the parties came to. The parties have met and discussed the idea. It is supported on a bipartisan basis as well as a union and management basis to move forward and at least look at this as a task force. The reason that we need this intergovernmental agreement or this legislation in regards to merger is that there was a feasibility study upon which you will be hearing about later, in which it was determined that there could be some more substantial savings as a result of merger as opposed to partnership in this regard. We brought you the Dash 2 amendments. We spent some time working on them, and we'd ask for your support if you're looking for any questions.
Mr. Chair, I would just add one thing. I think it's behooves us here to acknowledge and thank former Representative John Watt, who has also worked very hard on this concept.
Thank you. Thank you both for being here. Some members of this committee, I think four of us, traveled to Jackson County a couple years ago and saw what was going on down there. I think it's admirable and look forward to the day the whole state's doing this, but it looks like we have to walk slowly and may have to do another study, something we don't do around here very often. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, pardon me just a second.
Thank you, Representative. I think this is a great idea.
And I think that more quickly our state government works in this fashion in many areas, the better off we'll all be in a bipartisan way. We can really accomplish a lot. And but what I hope doesn't come out of this after you study it, I would hope it's not just a pilot project. I hope that it becomes statewide, because you and Medford have already done a pilot project, so to speak, mm-hmm. working, and now you're going to iron out the kinks, and I'd like to see it, what comes out of that, to be a statewide proposal.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lofgren, I'd like to respond. That is our hope also, that as this task force meets, it's going to be very important as we move into this area that both management and labor are on the same, to be efficient and to be economical. And also there are other types of barriers that have to be identified, such as implementing legislation and those sort of ones. So this task force, as it meets, is to deal with those type of issues on a global scale, global meaning Oregon, not international, and so that other areas of the state can move into the same activity and the same relationship, and without having to restudy it, that this is what this task force will be doing.
Thank you. Representative Layton and then Bill.
Sure, I just think it's great when you have two lawyers from the area actually working together, and so that's a good sign.
Only a lawyer would make a comment like that.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where efficiency and cooperation are very good things, my only concern, and I don't understand it enough about how this works, is basically comes down to the question of dollars. As long as your efficiency and your cooperation doesn't affect the ability of my area to get the money necessary, and that's my only concern. I don't understand in terms of how this will affect funding and the dollars that are flowing and the balance in terms of communities that may not choose not to join the cooperative arrangement in terms of the ability to get projects on state highways done and the pull and tug of the dollars, because that to me is what the real issue is. And if we can gain efficiencies and increase more dollars that can go on the road, that's great, but then does that then put an imbalance in the system where it's going to draw dollars into it, which affects me and my district?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, the hope is that we can put more dollars on the roads in our area, and we are getting the allocation from ODOT as well as the money that the county's putting in. We can save on some of those administrative expenses, save on behalf of the amount of equipment that we've got to buy, both from the ODOT and county level, have more money on our roads there. It's not our intent to take from your pocket.
Thank you both very much for being here. If it doesn't work, some of those term level people will come back to punch.
Thank you.
We have about four people signed up to testify, and maybe it's Bill Penhollow and Joel from Jackson County, and maybe you wouldn't mind if Tim Josie joined you, a former member of this committee and now a county commissioner, and he got a promotion and a pay raise. Put more chairs out there. You want to? Please come up and join us.
Can you get there again?
Thank you. Mr. Penhollow, your name's in red in the first here.
Yes. I just had a red pen back there, so I used it. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow with the Association of Oregon Counties, and the individual on the far right is Commissioner Tim Josie from Tillamook County. As you indicated, one of our former state representatives. And next to me is Joe Sprawl. Joe is Public Works Director in Jackson County. We're appearing before you today in support of House Bill 3465 and the -2 amendments. I just want to make a few opening comments, and then I'll turn to Mr. Sprawl and Commissioner Josie to give you more of the details. I would want to compliment both Mr. Sprawl and Paul Mather, who is the region manager for Region 3 in Roseburg, right? As two individuals that with real forward-looking interest in seeing how they could manage their respective responsibilities and maintain a seamless system in Southern Oregon. Joe and Paul initiated this partnering effort, which has gone much further there than in any of our other counties. And so they're kind of the example that we're looking to. But I would point out to you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that there are a number of other counties that are also exploring similar kinds of partnering arrangements, have been partnering for several years, and are looking for additional opportunities to increase the efficiencies and save money so that more money could go to the roads. During the interim, we established a working group with several county officials and Mr. Doug Tindall from ODOT and worked through a number of issues that were administrative problems that we had experienced in trying to work these partnerships at the county level. And I would compliment Mr. Tindall for the work that he has done in taking care of a number of the administrative problems that arose as we worked through this process. Mr. Strahl has, as I indicated, has gone further. He's to a point where he has the ability to move ahead, but ODOT needs, if you will, some kind of recognition, acknowledgement from its governing body, which is the legislature, to move ahead in the area where they are considering going beyond partnering and possibly merging. So this bill, as amended, would establish a task force that would look at that opportunity and bring recommendations back to the legislature. Let me conclude there, Mr. Chair, and turn to Mr. Strahl, ask him if he wouldn't basically talk about what has happened in Jackson County, and then Commissioner Josie can share with you the work that's going on between ODOT and Tillamook County.
Thank you, Bill. Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Joseph Strahl. I'm the Public Works Director for Jackson County. I've been in that position nearly 15 years. I have submitted written testimony for the record, but if you'll allow, I'll depart a little bit from that. I'm here to kind of give you a picture of some of what we've been doing in Jackson County with the Oregon Department of Transportation, what we've been able to achieve by working closely together, and where we would like to take this partnership that has been created from this point. Our working relationship actually began shortly after Paul Mather became our region manager in late 1994. We sat down across the table from one another, discussed how we might work closer together. The premise that we worked from was that the citizens that use our road systems don't really care whether they're on a county road or a state highway. They don't really have much interest in who maintains the roads. They just want the roads taken care of. They want it done in a safe fashion, and they want it done economically and cost-effectively as possible. We involved, in 95, we involved many of our staff, including frontline workers, and we began to develop a picture of for everybody of how we could work closely together. And our goal at that time was to look more like one agency. We called this a partnership, as opposed to working together. I have prepared a list of achievements as part of my testimony. I'll just go through those briefly, what we've been able to achieve since that time under this partnership arrangement. We've been performing a number of work activities together, actually getting used to working with one another on both county roads and state highways. We have purchased equipment together, such as a $200,000 culvert cleaning machine, which prior to this partnership arrangement, we would have had to probably buy one for each agency. We've just bought one of those machines, and both agencies use it. We've combined bridge maintenance crews to perform large maintenance jobs more cost-effectively. We've been making use of ODOT safety professionals to train both ODOT and Jackson County employees in safe working practices. We've helped each other out with winter maintenance activities like snow plowing and ice control. We've been using the Jackson County Sign Shop for manufacturing the signs for both agencies to save both time and money in new and replacement signs within District 8. We've combined traffic control crews. The crews that install those signs, reflectors, pavement markers, and so forth. And we do that work on a jurisdictionally buying basis. We have been using the ODOT snowblower in Jackson County this winter with the heavy snows that we've had. Last year, we were able to sell our old snowblower and actually delete it from the fleet, so we can rely on ODOT to the extent that they can remove snow for us. We've used county forces to chip seal various state highways at significant cost savings compared to asphalt overlay, the previous maintenance method. We've used county forces to maintain landscaped areas in the freeway. We've combined our pothole patching personnel and put them in one specific unit that's designed for more effective pothole patching, and we do that on a jurisdictionally blind basis also. Both county roads and state highways are patched as we go down the road. One of our more effective efforts has actually gone beyond just road maintenance, where we combine the ODOT District 8 engineering and administrative offices with the Jackson County offices to better serve the public. One phone number and one address works for either agency. So no matter who the call is for, if the public is calling about a county road or a state highway, they just call one number and the call is directed to the appropriate person from one telephone system. They come to one address for meetings, and we have much closer interaction. Those are some of the examples of the kinds of things that we've been able to do through this. We've had some challenges as well. I think you've heard about those before. We have different management systems, different financial systems. There's some turf issues that we've been trying to overcome. But from what we can tell, the benefits far outweigh the difficulties in this kind of thing. The public really likes it. It's more convenient for them. It makes sense to them, and it's less costly. We looked at, about 2 years ago, actually began to explore the issue of what if this partnership could be expanded and improved upon. And what we wanted to explore was the idea of looking like one agency through the partnership and going more toward becoming one road maintenance agency. Have a unified road maintenance organization that looks at the system as one system, not a system of separate county roads from separate state highways, but one road system. We thought that that would help remove a lot of the turf issues that had been holding us back, and we called this a merger or a consolidation as opposed to a partnership. About a year ago, a feasibility study was completed that analyzed both the partnership and the concept of consolidation or merger. It was a joint study. It was conducted by people within the Department of Transportation in their financial section, a Jackson County auditor, our internal auditor, and overseeing the whole thing was were people from the Oregon Division of Audits. It was a joint study that was completed last year and distributed to all the legislators at that time. What the study told us was that both the partnership idea and the merger idea were beneficial. They produced good things for citizens. They were both cost-effective things to do. But it also said that the merger was roughly five times better. You could achieve a five-fold increase in savings if you could actually merge the maintenance organizations of the county and the state. And those savings would come from things like reduced overhead, reduced numbers of pieces of equipment, and cost of maintaining that equipment, reductions in the number of facilities, like the remote shops and so forth that we both have. And we could save in the numbers of personnel and management personnel and so forth associated with this. But it was our intention not to have any layoffs, and it would take a large number of years to accomplish those savings through attrition. So that's what we'd be looking at. As part of my testimony, I've attached the decision tree that was included in that feasibility report, and that decision tree said that we need to make a clear choice between whether we want to merge organizations or whether we want to continue partnering. To us, our choice was fairly clear. We needed to merge if we were going to take advantage of the maximum savings and maximum benefit for the taxpayer. One of the very first hurdles that we have to get through if we are going to merge our organizations is legislative authority to do so. We are very cognizant of labor concerns and concerns of employees and so forth about radical change. In recognition of that, we have worked together on these NS2 amendments, and we think that that is a reasonable way to go, and we would support that. At this point, as Mr. Penhall pointed out earlier, Jackson County has provided me with the authority that I need in order to accomplish a merger. And it's basically, ODOT needs the same kind of authority from the legislature. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Maybe we'll let Commissioner Josie testify, and we have questions in the panels, then we can start firing away. Thank you for being here.
You bet. My name is, for the record, Tim Josie, County Commissioner. Representative Loken, I used to sit in that chair.
I have a picture documenting that.
Commissioner Josie, I am in your office. And appreciate you.
Thank you.
It's a little homely.
It's actually, there's a lot of fun coming back, but, you know, I can also tell you for the folks that are just about term limited out, there is life after the life. And when I drive home tonight, I won't look back. It's always a pleasure to go back home. I get to spend my evenings with my family, and that's a lot of fun, and I thoroughly enjoy the job being county commissioner. After the 95 legislative session, I was appointed to the Interim Transportation Committee, and that's how I got to know Chair Montgomery, and had a lot of wonderful experiences on field trips with the committee. And one of the most memorable field trips that we had for me was the trip to Jackson County, where I had the opportunity to meet with Mr. Strahl and talk about, and this was during the 1996 interim committee year, and I had a chance to talk to them about what they were proposing to do at that time, and that was to merge the two facilities, ODOT facilities and the Jackson County facilities, and it sounded very, very promising because, you know, one of the things that they like to say, most people can't tell the difference, they don't really care who owns the pothole, whether it belongs to the state or the county. And so they really want to commend Jackson County and the ODOT officials in the area and then the leadership given them from ODOT headquarters here in Salem to move forward with this an innovative enterprise. And they have gone a long ways. They have made some mistakes, and they've encountered some road bumps. And we can all be very grateful for that because we're learning from their experiences. In Tillamook County, now that I'm a county commissioner, I worry about the problems in Tillamook County, and I can tell you that the potholes in Tillamook County have never been worse. I've lived there my whole life. It is a disaster there. People call every day in my office, three or four or five phone calls about their particular road, and in my mind I keep thinking, yeah, why don't you just get in line, because every road is bad. They're really, really bad. And I don't think Tillamook County is any different than any other county. Our road situation is a total disaster. Now, if you haven't figured it out, I'm talking about road funding, too, so I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone. So I think it's
a bill out of committee.
Good for you. I also realize I'm preaching to the choir. I should be over on the Senate side. station. I don't know whether I've got the guts to do that. But anyway, getting back to House Bill 3465, I was really encouraged to see this bill introduced this legislative session. When I talked to the people in Tillamook County, we all recognize that our, and the people in Tillamook County recognize that our roads are in a real state of disrepair and that we've got a huge financial crisis. But before they're willing to move forward with any type of a levy to fix the roads, they want to know that we're scratching out every bit of efficiency that we can. And when I think of efficiency, I'm thinking of two basic things, two basic areas that we're working on in Tillamook County with our road department. First one is just looking at our shop and making sure that it's run efficiently, and we have a task force that is working on that, and we'll have a recommendation within about a month. But the other area of efficiency is the concept of merging with the Tillamook County ODOT road crew. And to that end, we had scheduled a trip to Jackson County for the 8th and 9th of this month, and at the last minute, our Public Works Director, John O'Shell, who you all know because he's testified here several times, his wife had an illness and he couldn't make it. So we rescheduled it for the end of May, or it's either May or June. So we're actively looking at that. We've been following what Jackson County has been doing, and we recognize that there is a huge potential for savings that will go make a significant difference in the amount of dollars that we can actually put on the road. And so Tillamook County is very interested in it. And I will say that the ODOT folks in the region are also very interested in working with us. And they have expressed an eagerness to embark upon this enterprise with us. And so we'll be visiting you folks within the next month or two. So it goes without saying that I'm wholeheartedly in support of House Bill 3465. I'm a little bit reluctant to support the Dash 2 amendments, but I'm also pragmatic and understand that it takes a while to get from here to there. As long as it doesn't turn into another study and nothing goes, it doesn't develop into anything, because there is a tremendous amount of potential for this sort of thing. It's the way to go. It's looking into the future. And so for that reason, I will support the Dash 2 amendments.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And we have one more. Doug, thanks for being here, by the way.
Chair Montgomery, member of the committee, Doug Tenlow, maintenance engineer with the Oregon Department of Transportation. Let me quickly give you 4 points about this bill, about the issue. First off, there's some history that goes back for a long time. ODOT crews and county crews, without the sage advice of all of us at the top, have managed to find ways to be more efficient and share work. It's been going on for a long time. It's done with handshakes. It's still done like that. The first reaction I got from a lot of maintenance employees when we started talking about this partnership thing is, well, we already do that. But while they did it, to some extent, they didn't do it to the extent that we're seeing now with Jackson County and other counties, and they didn't do it to the extent that is proposed by House Bill 3465. I think that with that backdrop, it is time to move forward, and I think that there's some thanks that to getting us to move forward for Joe Strahl, who's pushed on the county side and continually not only pushed but tried to work through all of the problems, to former Representative Watt, who had, I'm sure, a number of issues that he could have taken on past his term in office and chose to stay and work transportation issues, and I, for one, really appreciate that. I think having him on the transportation side adds a lot of good insights. And thanks to this committee, really, for taking on what is a complex issue. It's Representative Krepp, I was thinking this is like circling a grass field at 5,000 feet, and everything looks nice and smooth until those back wheels hit. And it sounds like a great idea. It looks like a great idea. It is a great idea, but there are a lot of bumps that need attention and need to be worked out. And Chair Montgomery, I know you don't like interim committees. I certainly have been on enough of them myself, but I think that if we're really going to move forward and be successful in this, this is the right thing to do. With respect to Representative Hill's question regarding funding, the intention of this is not to draw funding away from other parts of the state. The intention of this is to make the most efficient possible use of funding in the area. And we've looked for partnerships. I think that the new amendments don't restrict this just to Jackson County. ODOT is willing to look at entering into this type of partnership or this type of merger organization anywhere in the state. Finally, I guess I just want to try and emphasize the importance of this. There are a lot of issues that need to be worked through. I think the interim committee has a somewhat daunting task in front of them, but with people like Joe Saul on working the issue and Commissioner Josie working the issue, I think we can move forward. What we're talking about when you start to look at really what the impact of this is a revolutionary change in government in general, not just state government or county government, but a revolutionary change in government. It's going to take some time to undo a lot of the binds that have been put in place throughout all of the years of government. But this will ultimately save taxpayer money. Whether it saves the state money, whether it saves county money, who knows? Who knows where the savings occur? It probably occurs in both places. But the important part is that it saves taxpayer dollars. And that's why this bill is a very important bill, a bill that needs to pass to make sure that we keep moving towards the merged organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. And by the way, I totally agree. This is done all over the state in Cascade Lock, snow plowing, and Gillen County, rock crushing. The problem we have in local government, we haven't been bragging on ourselves enough. This is an opportunity to let the public know we are doing it. We're going to do more of it, and the state government supports what you're doing. We just have to move at a slower pace, and the interim committee may be in all order. Thank you very much. Other questions of the committee? Representative Wilson?
I have a couple. First of all, direct the first question to Doug. What do you see as the biggest problem in getting started on this kind of a merger? I'm looking at this tree that accompanied Mr. Strahl's letter and talking about accounting barriers and establishing a framework for work planning and so on. Where would be the biggest initial barrier?
Chair Montgomery, Representative Loken, I think I'm probably going to irritate some people in the department with the statement, but in state government with the statement, but it's what I believe in, and I think it's really true. I think there's two areas. The first area is sort of an administrative area. Bill talked about some of the work that I've done in terms of trying to smooth out the administrative procedures. And what I found, and this isn't a criticism of the people that do this, but it's a criticism of the process in some respects, that in particular the financial staff and the legal staff. I don't know it as well on the county side as I do on the state side, but I'm sure there's some of it on the county side as well, and I've seen some of it in other areas pop up. The financial staff and the legal staff hold a view that of trying to hold their organization or the organization, the level of government which they represent, they try and hold that whole. Well, what that does sometimes is create inefficiencies in terms of total expenditure of tax dollars. So you go to your legal staff and they say, well, that's a bad move, or that's not as good a deal as we can get or whatever in terms of an ODOT or in terms of a county. But I've tried to explain to them, but it's a better deal for public dollars overall. And they calmly explain back to me, yeah, but we're not charged with protecting public dollars overall. We're charged with protecting the state dollars. And I've heard those from both, or the state's interest. And I've heard that from both the financial people and the legal people. So I consider that to be a significant hurdle of trying to, and why I said it's a revolutionary change, is how do you manage government as a whole as more efficiently, and rather than having the separate boundaries of all the public entities. The second concern that I have that I think is a significant concern is going to be with employees. The fact is that this is not going to work unless the employees are on board. And Joe and I were just talking this morning, again, as we've talked before, and we've got to find a way we certainly don't want to be unfair to our employees, and I don't believe we are, and I think the unions might have a different view of that. And I think that if I don't think we're being unfair, and the unions do, then we haven't done a very good job of explaining why it's not going to be unfair to employees. So I think that those two, thinking outside of the boxes of government, level of the government that we're in, and dealing with the employee issues are the two single biggest, or two single, the two biggest obstacles that we're going to deal with.
Thank you very much.
I had one more.
One more question, and we're moving on.
Mr. Shaw, you list areas that you've already worked with and have accomplished a lot, evidently. Have you a dollar figure as far as the cost savings on your first page there? Have been able to do that?
Chair Montgomery, Representative Logan, it's very difficult to come up with exact dollar amount, and so we haven't been concentrating so much on that. We know we're saving money. I would have to build on what Doug says, is that for either the county or the state, it may look like we're spending more money. There's some sort of a budget paradox going on with respect to that, but we actually are saving funds by doing these things together, and it is working more efficiently, and it's providing better service. Trying to put a precise number on either the dollar savings or the better service is very difficult to do, and I don't have a total. Obviously, if we're buying one $200,000 truck as opposed to two, there's a $200,000 savings, but beyond those kind of obvious assumptions, it's difficult to come up with a number.
That's an obvious thing that your study can come up with for the next session. We can answer that question. We have a couple of the people we'd like to call on. Thank you all. Tim Gilsey, thanks for coming, my old roommate, and Joe, thanks for the long drive up. We appreciate you coming. We don't have anyone else on the list, but I'd like to ask Mr. Peppers if he would take just a couple seconds and come forward. I know there's been negotiations and negotiations and more negotiations, so please.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you. For the record, Rich Pepper with the Logan Public Employees Union, and I did, thanks for calling me up. I did just want to let the committee know that we have participated with the work group that has come up with the Dash 2 amendments. We're supportive of the Dash 2 amendments. I wanted to also let the committee know that the general attitude of our membership in both the county and the state group of road department workers is that as taxpayers, too, they believe that there should be efficiencies, but they also work on the inside, and they see a lot of sort of the inside story and are not necessarily as convinced of the beauty of this thing as some others may be because of what they perceive on the inside, and there's a healthy dose of skepticism that probably needs to be worked through. Therefore, we believe the Dash 2s help resolve that. And by the way, our concerns and skepticism are not just restricted to the labor issues, the traditional labor issues, but also to more general policy issues, too, that some of which were being addressed by folks here earlier related to different levels of government and how priorities get addressed and various other things. But we believe that the best way to address all of those concerns is through the process that's outlined in Dash 2 amendments, and we're fully supportive of them.
Thank you, and if this does pass the committee, we look for you being very active in the interim committee. Very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. If there's no one else on our list to testify, I'd like to close the public hearing. And with the permission of the committee, if they feel comfortable, I'll open the session on House Bill 3465. We have before us, first of all, the Dash 2 amendments. That's the pleasure of the committee.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. This type of language, where does this go into the statutes? Is it sunset when this task force is through, or how is this really put into the Oregon statutes?
I'm looking to Janet to answer that. Pardon me, Janet.
Mr. Chair, it doesn't necessarily, it may be just a temporary provision, it may or may not be ratified at the determination of legislative council. But I just got these this morning, too, and I don't see anything that an interim task force.
Also, we don't have a fiscal statement on this. What's this task force going to cost? Where is the money coming from? Because they're going to lot money in here to non-legislative members. compensation and expenses. So it would seem like there's going to be some costs to run this task force.
Mr. Chair, the staffing is provided under Section 9 by the legislature, and to use the services of permanent legislative staff, and to the extent that their staff can cover the interim committee work, there would not be additional people hired. But if enough task forces are created or interim committees created by the speaker, president, or by statute, there may be need to be additional people hired.
Some of the task force, the members that are not members of the legislature, their expenses are not covered because those people are sometimes on somebody else's payroll, and they just take time from their current job. Mm-hmm. But I see here that they're going to be entitled to compensation and expenses. And so I'm just wondering where all the money's going to come from to run this operation.
I think that Representative Wells raises a good question. I think that there'd be questions could be answered in the Senate side. I know we don't like the passing of them soon enough, but maybe there's other opportunities for them. We're going to end up with a lot of these bills bottled up. We don't see some of them moving over there.
If they don't move, they're dead. That's a statement. That's not a question.
Chairman, I move the dashers.
We don't have those types of statements.
At this point, it's been explained to us by the our staff that it's going to come out of legislative staff. If you feel uncomfortable on the fiscal statement, we can do that. But the pleasure of the committee, Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, shouldn't this go down to Ways and Means?
Why should it go to Ways and Means?
To the dollars? Other task force than...
Okay.
I'm just...
There's enough questions on the committee. We will shut down the work session on this. We'll bring it back Monday with more answers for you. Your questions are well taken. And we will get this out of here on Monday someplace. I don't want to send us to Ways and Means if I don't have to go to Ways and Means because that's a graveyard. Yes. I'm sorry, folks. We have a 36-hour notice. It'll have to be Wednesday. If that's okay with the committee?
May I ask one more question? Do we
ask a lot of questions? Go ahead.
Are we still under the rule where we have to have fiscal statements or not? I guess we need to have that clarified.
Sure, that's Representative Wells. That's in our committee rules, and it would take a suspension of the rules, which is a two-thirds vote to pass it without. But that's usually just done without objection.
It's committee rules or House rules now. We're operating under on these fiscal statements. So I think we need to have that clarified.
My understanding is that the committee rules, if you'd like me to text, you can stand at ease and call Ramona.
We don't have much time to stand at ease, so
I'm not stuck on the fiscal thing, but I there for a while we seemed like we're in our committees we were operating, we had to have a fiscal and we couldn't move anything. And so then I was wondering, has this changed or what happened?
You're chairman of the committee. I have everything changes of you.
In my committee, we have to have a fiscal. At least we thought we did. We
shut the public hearing down on House Bill. We set the work session on House Bill 3465. We'll have our questions answered, and we'll get back to it Wednesday. Or we could reopen this and send it to Ways and Means if the committee would like to do that. The chair would prefer not to send it to Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
Okay. Sorry we've gotten this far on this bill. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2841.
Janet? Mr. Chair, House Bill 2841 would change the population threshold for cities that are allowed, the areas that are allowed to withdraw from mass transit districts. Allowing cities with fewer than 15,000 persons to withdraw. It also adjusts the filing schedule for withdrawal petitions to allow petitions for withdrawal in the year 2000 and every year thereafter. Mr. Chair, I believe at your place is a copy of the statute starting with RS 267-250 for withdrawal of territories from mass transit districts. There is a process that has gone through with petitioning and a certain number of petition signatures from the area. the determination by the existing district as to the effect on the rest of the district and certain criteria listed in ORA 267-257 as to what has to be shown in order for the withdrawal to be determined and to be allowed. Mr. Chair, the changes are in the population threshold and in the number of the timing that the withdrawal can take place. Mr. Chair, the city of Wilsonville is one of the areas that hasn't withdrawn from transportation district, and that was when the statute was created, was part of that negotiation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. This representative is here. I come forward. I see before us, did you explain the dash on amendments?
No, I
can do that if you like.
Why do we have dash one amendments on the day of the bill's hearing when it's so important to get this bill through? Mr. Thank you, Reverend Schrader. Maybe you can explain that to us.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. I'm Representative Kurt Schrader, House District 23. I appreciate the chair and the committee hearing this bill. The life of this bill was somewhat indeterminate until fairly recently. We've been working with TriMet to make sure that they were comfortable with this whole concept and had some difficulty getting through in terms of trying to get a meeting set up, given our schedule and their schedule. And as a result, we finally did get through. We talked to apparently at least the chairman of the board. We talked to the director, the government affairs individuals, and felt that we wanted to make sure that they were comfortable with our bill, and hence the dash ones. They're very simple, and I can explain those. The bill itself is, just as the committee administrator said, it's a straightforward opportunity for two jurisdictions to look at the possibility of doing their own transit district, which means they would be able to withdraw from TriMet. This is enabling legislation. They still have to go through a petitioning process before the TriMet board to be able to move out. It applies to just Troutdale and Canby, the two communities to be covered by this. The bill and the amendments are similar. What we're doing is making sure that only those two communities can pursue this option, i.e. communities between 10,000 and 15,000 population in the next 2 years. The other communities have already gone through all this, so we don't want to go through a big, long process for all the other communities getting on board. This is just for this small cohort. And that's the reason for the amendments on lines 1 through 4 under dash 1 amendments. Line 21 of the dash 1 amendments changes the clock from 2000 to 2001. That gives our community a chance to put the application in and go through it. We had some previous information, I think, Dixie from TriMet could testify that it's going to take a little longer than the bill originally stated to make sure we're able to complete the process. So calendar year 2000 is too short, so we request 2001. And then, quite frankly, Section 2, all that does is sunset the bill. It's a sunset. It just says, okay, Candy, Troutdale, you've got 2 years to do it. If you can't make it work in that time, we'll go back to the original language of the statute. We have members of my community here. I believe they're probably, I think they're in favor of that particular amendment. We hope that the committee would look favorably upon the bill. It does allow, just real quick, I will state that it does allow our community to, frankly, I think, give timely and better service. We are located at the periphery of the TriMet district. It has been difficult, I think, for TriMet to inexpensively meet the needs of the peripheral communities. We've seen recent articles in the paper where they're doing some good business and looking at their routes and those at the periphery that are not profitable or helpful to the citizens, they're rerouting. I think Canby looks at this as an option to perhaps give better service at less cost. There were some preliminary discussions with the smart people in Wilsonville would indicate that we could probably provide the same existing service for half the cost at this point in time. We're not in any formal negotiations, but we were exploring things to see if this even made sense, and apparently it does. And I know the community itself is interested in enhanced service. We have a growing population, senior population. There's one whole section of town that not only has a senior center, but has a relatively new 280-unit assisted living continuum full care senior project
We'd like to be able to have good transit between that location and downtown. So there's a lot of good reasons, I think, for this opportunity to go forward, and we're just asking for consideration by the committee to allow the community to petition permit.
Thank you, Representative. And Senator, I just looked up and saw you out there. You're welcome to join us anytime to come up here if you're on the list. We have a few questions for the benefit of the committee. We have six people signed up to testify, and we're going to stop at 9:30 and go to the next bill. So if we don't get into work session on this, the bill doesn't go anywhere. Thank you, Senator, for being here, and Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a clarifying question, if I may, and that is in the Dash 1 amendments to Section 3, the amendments, it says section by Section 2 become operative on December 31, 2001, but it's in the calendar year of 2001.
Sure.
So if these amendments don't become operative until 2001, then how can you apply during the course of 2001?
I had the same question. Apparently, this is the way LC draft sunsets now. Lines 1 through 4 take care of what we want to have done. Section 2 and Section 3 repeal what we're doing right now in 2001. If you'll notice in Section 2, it says exceeding 10,000, and then it brackets, i.e. deletes, the very thing we're putting in for these next 2 years. So that's all it is the way LC does the sunset. So I'm asking why, but that's how they do the sunset. So what we're doing is allowing a window of opportunity for 2 years through December 31st, 2001, for communities between 10 and 15,000 to petition withdrawal from TriNet. That opportunity goes away as per Section 2. That's just the sunset. The way they do it, don't ask me why. Lawyers have their own national.
We don't have any lawyers up here now. He's out testifying. That's okay. Senator, thank you. Go ahead. Representative Logan and Representative Gale. It's up to you how far this bill goes. Thank you.
I have a question, and I kind of like it because it might give TriNet a chance to get down Houston Road with a bus and a walk. But I have a question about the funding on this. How would this be funded?
Sure. The business is still retaining some sort of payroll tax, obviously, and it would be funding the system. And just a question of how much and for what services. We'll be looking at all the ADA requirements. And our goal is, again, to provide enhanced service for the businesses.
Okay.
President
Bill? Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're increasing the running range to 10,000 to 15,000. Which I would suggest there's other cities within the climate boundaries that would affect. That would affect Cornelia, and I believe Forest Grove is under 15,000. And they may have gone over the top. So in terms of, and you could draw the lines to see it's still contiguous out there. So I don't know if I can work that.
I think Nicky, you could probably testify to representatives. I was on my
friend. Senator, thank you for being with me.
I can read the clock, Mr. Chair, so I will be very, very brief. I just want to add my support to this bill. As Representative Schrader pointed out, it is simply enabling legislation that still the city of Canby would still have to meet the requirements of TriNet for maintaining the same standard of service and enhanced services. Another part of our shared district standing has already gone with this experiment, and the purpose of which is to provide better service. And being on the periphery of the TriNet district, the fact there's only two buses that come late in the evening, it makes it difficult to use what the transit system is there for, and that is to have people use mass transit. I would urge your support of this to provide better services and to give the opportunity to make that case to TriNet.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Now on our list of city council from Canby, and if you'd like to come up to the panel, that's fine, or however you'd like to handle it. Scott Taylor from Canby, Randy Carson, city council,
Walter Daniels, City Council, I believe, and Jerry, I can't pronounce your last name, Jerry.
No, sir.
Thank you, sir. I believe I got all the names, sir. Thank you for being with us and joining us however you like.
Montgomery, I'm Scott Taylor, Mayor of the City of Camby. With me is Walt Daniels, Council President, Randy Carson, and fellow councilor, and Derek Noe, our City Planning Director. Walt and I will also lead the clock and talk very fast. We'll be the only ones testifying for it. To just go along with what Representative Schroeder and Senator Metzger indicated, the whole purpose of this for us is to be able to have an opportunity to explore better service, a different way of doing business. For those who aren't familiar, Camby is on the outskirts of the metropolitan area. We're about 8 miles from Oregon City, and we're about 6 miles from Wilsonville. We've talked to the folks in Wilsonville and their smart program they have that has buses that run down and join the TriMet hubs to move people in. We'd be able to work with them or establish our own bus system. We have a number of people who live in town. We have about 185 people a day who ride this bus. And a number of them, when we surveyed them, said that they cannot use the bus to, like, go to school, either to Clackamas Community College, Portland State, any of the universities, and do anything in the evening. The last bus runs to Camby about 7 o'clock, and you either get to the station by then or you don't ride the bus. We'd like to improve that kind of service delivery. As was mentioned, we have a retirement center that Walt will talk more about. We also have a brand new shopping center coming on the outskirts of town, and we then have a downtown that we've been working very hard to revitalize. We'd like to increase our bus service and our ability to move our citizens within our city and then tie them to the main hub in Oregon City, where they can get downtown Portland. And what this would allow us to do is actually study that, see if it's viable, see what the cost and the ability is. Right now, under the law, we can't even ask the questions because we're over 10,000. We're about 12,500 at this point. And we would then make those kind of adjustments internally. We'd go through the whole process with TriMet up to make the application and get the approval. So this just gives us the opportunity to look out for our citizens and provide some different feasibility.
Thank you.
Chairman Montgomery and committee members, my name is Walter Daniels, and I've been a counselor for the City of Camby for 12 years in the Camby business and for 20 years in the retail hardware business. Transportation has always been a concern of mine as a businessman and also as elected official. Why are we wanting the relief from TriMet? We are in TriMet, we were not in Metro. I believe there are several reasons for getting a better service that we can if we're out of the TriMet. Most important is that the need is to improve our transportation service for our citizens. We do not have the services needed for our growing community. The TriMet schedule do not meet the needs of the worker who goes to Portland and works from 9 to 5, or college students have late evening classes. We do not have any real late evening runs into Camby. Camby is a growing community with a large number of single-family homes, apartments, and the Hope Village. Hope Village is located 1 mile from downtown Camby and consists of 80 assisted living apartments, 50 low-income apartments, and 22 garden apartments, which are individually owned, with additional 10 coming online soon. There is a van that gives limited service to the assisted living, but it's operated by volunteers. This van is to use for doctor's appointments, banking, and some shopping on a limited basis, and has a fixed schedule. We have a belt center that serves 77 meals a day, and they only have 18 riders using their bus, the rest of them coming by their own transportation. But the building of Camby Market Center, approximately 3/4 mile from downtown, is to be opened in November 1999. 165,000 square foot of Fred Meyer and some 45,000 square foot of other goods and services will be provided. This center is approximately 3/4 from the downtown, which means that it's not pedestrian accessible. It would be either by car or by other means of transportation. Approximately 10% of the Camby's population is Latino, and many of these people don't drive and rely on walking to the grocery store. In 1996, 79.24% of the working population in Camby drove alone to work, with only 1.89% using public transportation. We find that 51% of these people spend 10 to 29 minutes in travel time. If the bus was provided, we would probably keep a lot of cars off the road. The phase two of our industrial park and many manufacturers in Camby, workers could ride the bus if available and cut down the amount of cars that are driving our highways right now, which is becoming quite a problem in Camby. Another factor is the growing senior population that are reluctant to drive in this congestion and this is as a result of our 5% of growth. As a former businessman and present city councilor, I feel that we need to address our transportation needs now. The problem is now, and it has been for some time, so our hands have been tied to do anything. We have tried to get better service from TriMet, but no avail. There is a time now that we can give our citizens the freedom to develop a transportation system that would meet the needs of our citizens today. 5 years down the road is too long. I ask for your vote for the citizens of Canby. Thank you for all your time and energy that you put into this bill.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. We have two others. Would they like to come up and say something?
Oh, we want to watch your clock, sir.
Well, thank all four of you for taking time out of your busy day. I know you make a lot of money as mayor and city councilor, so we'll move to double your salary in this bill. So thank you all very much for being here. We appreciate it. Dick Feeney, we have you with us today. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dick Feeney. I'm the Executive Director of Government Affairs at TriNet. We have no objection to this bill, Mr. Chairman. We do support its amendments. We look forward to the opportunity to work with the City of Canby on their plans. And I think that our board has a very open mind about this. We'll be willing to work with them in the plans that they have to have subsidy service if they do withdraw from the district. We look forward to the opportunity of working with them. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Sure. Thank you, Dick. You're up pretty well.
On line 11, on the dash 1, we're putting the 10,000 back, but saying that not exceeding 15,000. What does that say, this difference in just putting the 15,000 population figure in there?
On line, which line?
On line 11 of the dash 1.
Oh, Representative Schrader explained, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wells, what this section?
Yeah, I missed that when I was out. Did you cover that?
What this section?
Go ahead.
Yeah,
shortly.
What this section does is to restore the statute the way it is now, after allowing until December 31st of 2001 a window to open for a community between the size of 10,000 and 15,000.
I understand that, but why not just use the number 15,000?
Because this is the restoration, and what we're
not exceeding.
There is a current cap of 10,000, and what this legislation would do would be to temporarily allow that cap to go up to 15,000 until 2001, and then it comes back to 10,000. That's the purpose of this legislation.
So, Mr. Chairman, the language then in Section 3, amendment relating to Section 2, make that revert after a certain date, madam.
That's right. It's actually a revert. Instead of sunsetting, it's a reversion, I guess, or really Representative Schrader was explaining the lawyers. I have constructed it, right?
Thank you. Representative Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the time, I'm going to ask my questions before the rapid discussion, so Mr. Keeney will cooperate. If Canby or Troutdale was to remove themselves from the district, would they still be obligated for payment of the general obligation bonds that were approved for Westside Life Square?
They may be still liable for general obligation bonds, but they are not for the payroll tax.
Second, when a person is within the TriNet system, you get a combination of payroll tax, federal funds, and fare box revenue. But when they're coming from outside of the system, like the situation in Wilsonville, all that you get is fare box revenue. Do you get any reflection in your numbers in terms of what your federal funds would be? I know you won't have payroll tax for them, but you're then obligated to transport that person anywhere within the finance system.
Depending on whether they form a district or if they are city operation. In the case of Mohawk, if formed a district, they're eligible for some state funds under the state in lieu of tax program. Any operation outside of a large operation still eligible to receive funds that come through from the federal government for the rural programs, which are Federal Section 16 and Section 18, and they are eligible to receive funds under the Cigarette Tax that do pass through us at this point, pass through us for distribution to smaller cities for elderly disabled, for smaller districts that are within the same counties which are organized for elderly and disabled transportation.
Final question. Yes, sir. Is there a sentiment by the Tarnet Board in viewing this legislation favorably?
That we don't oppose it.
That you don't oppose it. That that you might want to contract some of your service from outlying areas to more concentrate on sort of the contiguous areas of the district?
I can't speak for the Tarnet Board, but I'll reflect that those sort of discussions have taken place in the past.
Thank you.
We have the same problem. Thank you, Dick, for being with us. We have the same problem or opportunity with this bill we have with the other. We do not have a fiscal at this point. I know it will come up. I didn't say something about it. I don't think it's a fiscal we need to worry about. I have no problem as chairman to let us move into work session if the committee feels comfortable with it. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2841, and we'll open the session on House Bill 2841. We have before us the Dash 1 Amendment. What's the pleasure of the committee? Representative Hill.
Move the Dash 1 Amendment.
Representative Hill moves the Dash 1 Amendment of 2841. Is there any opposition? Hearing none. So, Representative Heyman, excused. The Dash 1 Amendments are in House Bill 2841. Representative Hill.
I move House Bill 2841 as amended to the floor to be passed recommendation.
Representative Hill moves House Bill 2841 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Coleman.
I would just very quickly point out, in 1989, when Wilsonville seceded from the TriMet district, we were able to provide better service at half the cost. In other words, the payroll taxes went down 50% for our companies in Wilsonville. This was a good thing for them, and they definitely supported it. In the 10 years that the program has been in existence, SMART has started express services to Barber Boulevard and Tualatin, Oregon City, and Salem. And these are all with the blessing of TriMet, by the way. The service in the city is a lot more regular. It's taken us time to grow the service there, but it's been a good thing. And I think it's been a win-win for the people in Wilsonville to do this. And I certainly am supportive of Camby and Troutdale and their efforts.
Thank you, Representative Cromwell, and former mayor of Wilsonville, for your input on this. Thank you very much. Janet, did you have something before we...
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out, looking at the populations of Representative Hill asked about Forest Grove and Cornelius. Just looking real quickly, it looks like Forest Grove too did, and Cornelius could already qualify under the population in guidance.
So that's Representative Hill. So he made the motion. Mm-hmm. We have a Representative,
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification on that. There's also another portion of the bill that says TriMet will not, that you won't let an area out that where you would have, like if you can't let Cornelius out because you have your servant's Forest Grove, which is on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. There is one other city that you could possibly fit under this, and that is Sherwood.
Okay, we have the discussion taken care of. There's no further discussion. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Crook.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
Aye.
Representative Woodruff.
Aye.
Representative Peter.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
Yes, definitely.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye. House Bill 2841 passed to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Do I have a volunteer carrier? Representative Cromwell.
Sure, unless Representative Bill would like to hear it.
Representative Schrader, if that's okay with you.
Oh, it's oh, sure.
It's well. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative, for the bill. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
It's on its way to the floor. Next bill before us is House Joint Resolution 59. We'll open the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 59. Ben, could you give us a few words on that, please?
Mr. Chair, the first thing I want to point out is that there's a fiscal on House Joint Resolution 59. And I also want to point out that legislative fiscal is just completely unable to keep up with the number of bills that are being heard and going into possible restriction in the next few weeks. So I think this might not be uncommon, and they just physically can't take care of all the requests that are coming in. HR 59 proposes an amendment to the Constitution to allow funding for Oregon State Police Highway Patrol functions from revenues of some fuel taxes and other taxes on the ownership and operation of motor vehicles. The amount is blank in the bill, but it provides that no more than a certain percentage of such revenues be used for state police. Refers the amendment to voters at the next regular general election. This measure does have a subsequent referral for the Revenues Committee. You probably know the history that prior to 1980, the constitutional provision did allow state police and state parks to be part of the highway fund. A measure referred to the voters by the 1979 legislature was approved by voters and removed state parks and state police. State police have had a road strength decrease of nearly 32% patrol staffing since 1980. Mr. Chair, that's all I have, and the fiscal is mostly covers the election.
Okay, thank you. We have others representing GNL. Thank you for being here. Would you like to come forward and explain the bill? And we have other members of the committee who signed on. He's welcome to join. He's not paying attention, so please go ahead. Thank you.
No, I am paying attention.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Julie Gianella, representative for District 38. Thank you, Mr. Chair and colleagues. Right now, Oregon is in great need of more state troopers to help protect the citizens and promote safety on our highways. With a 32% decline of our patrol services division in the past 18 years, and the population increasing 23%, and the number of licensed drivers in Oregon increasing 33%, and the number of miles traveled on Oregon highways has increased 64%. Oregon needs a sharp increase for patrol services division. Right now, the patrol services division has 399 sergeants and troopers authorized by the legislature. That's 399 officers patrolling 2,782,000 licensed drivers. This is unacceptable. Just the presence of more troopers patrolling our highways will make it so drivers on the roads will become more cautious to avoid being caught speeding or driving recklessly. H.R. 59 would provide the stable funding that our state troopers need and deserve. Thank you. And thank you, Janet, for explaining what happened before and how they lost their funding. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, fellow members of the committee, I bring to you also perhaps a different perspective. As I have, I think, enunciated in this committee before, I have some personal experiences with the Oregon State Patrol in terms of working with them out on the roadways as a volunteer firefighter. I've also ridden with them. On one occasion not long ago, I rode with a gentleman who had put 50 hours of overtime in the previous 2 weeks. And this is a man about 32 years of age, very professional, two young daughters at home. That's an awful lot of overtime. We're asking our patrol officers to go well above and beyond what I consider to be the true call of duty. These are a group of very professional individuals, like I've indicated. Very proud of the work they do. I have enjoyed working with them over the years, but I do not think it is fair or right for us, the legislative body, to expect them to continue doing the work they do at the level they are and maintain the morale and the esprit de corps, because it has some effect. You cannot work those hours continually forever without having some detrimental effect on your personal outlook of life, most certainly on your family life. And I think we're all very concerned about families here. So I would encourage members of the committee to seriously consider voting this out to the floor or wherever it's going to go. It'll go to revenue, I believe. And I think it's time we did this. I think that the state police deserves stable funding. They deserve to put an adequate number of road troopers out there to, first of all, manage the roadway systems and enforce whatever speed limit we choose to adopt in this body, and secondarily, so that they can remain viable as an organization because we're not working them to death. So I think that this goes a long way towards achieving that goal, and I would urge your support of this measure. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this the language that existed in the Constitution last, let's say, part of the time, or is this, I'm just curious why it was drafted.
Mr. Chairman, we've got some people that have a lot of expertise in that area that can answer those questions.
Mr. Chairman, my concern, the way it's drafted, I had an opportunity to do a ride-along with the trooper out in Banks in terms of that he's the sole person out there, one of the people in the office, he's had a heart attack and was recuperating, the other person retired, and we have one trooper in an office that's supposed to have, I think, three or four. Had a very good experience in terms of the ride-along and understanding some of these issues in terms of with staffing and just looking in terms of the wording of this, because this is a constitutional amendment, this is saying that the dollars can only be used for policing on the public highways, roads, streets, and roadside rest areas, where I had the experience where, you know, we were up in by Hillsboro, and he was called to back up sheriff's deputies out in Timber. And so does that present a problem the way this wording is that limits in terms of what purposes you can spend the dollars for? Because if he's not patrolling, he's in his physical past was patrolling, he was asked to go and back up sheriff's troopers. I would be more comfortable if the wording were more general just to support the troopers, rather. I understand the focus, but you could run into some problems in terms of saying that it was unconstitutional for the dollars to come into my house and arrest me if that person was there to back somebody up, and I don't know how you'd deal with that from an accounting perspective to not violate the Constitution.
Thank you. I understand your wording, and I would kind of concur, maybe as we're proceeding forward here, if you could help us with a couple word changes there to make it so they can have more latitude and longitude and all the food they need. I think you will proceed with that, and maybe there'll be a couple word changes here. Representative Devlin?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Questions from both Representative Trump and Representative Gianella. Yes, if this resolution were to be sent to the voters in the past, would you both be willing to support increased vehicle-related fees and taxes to pay for it?
You are nasty. Thank you for bringing it forward.
I'd just like to add one more thing. When we send these state troopers out to protect us and they leave their families behind, we need to make sure that there's a backup when they're in trouble. If someone can come and rescue them when they need a call. Now, we're sending them out on the front lines to do battle, and we need to give them the ammunition and the troops to back them up. And I know you feel like I do, and I just appreciate your time today. Thank you.
In line with that, everybody on the committee knows that I better just prepare a potential conflict of interest. My daughter is a state trooper, so I better get that on the record again and again and again and again. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Very quick question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm just wondering if a Section F should be added that would show that this is in addition to already expended general fund dollars, or do you see this as becoming the only funding mechanism for our state police?
Well, we just see it as some hope for survival at this point, just another idea, another way to get some funds.
Well, the reason, Mr. Chair, the reason why I asked that question is the Measure 66 debate that we're now having. If you go out and ask any voter on the street, they feel that Measure 66 was to be added on to the dollars that are already being spent out of the general fund for salmon restoration and the parks. And in fact, what has happened is that the general fund dollars have been backed out and the lottery dollars have been put in to replace it. And I think that we need to make sure that there's a very strong either a section added so that we know exactly what the voters feel, or we make sure that the legislative intent is very clear that these dollars are either to be added onto the general fund dollars already being spent, or that this is going to become the only funding mechanism, because that also then tells the revenue committee what kind of percentage points they need to be looking at in terms of how they in terms of the percentage that they plug in here. As an example, if we're going 1% of the total of that budget, that's $220 million or thereabouts. If you go 2%, obviously it's $440 million. So my point is that I just want to make sure that our intent here is very clear, because obviously the Measure 66 debate, it wasn't clear enough, and consequently it's given the governor and us as legislators the wiggle room to say, well, you know, what they really meant was to fully fund those programs with those other dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Governor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking about some words. I think on line 22, if we strike the word and, the comma in, and after roadside rest areas, put a phrase that says, and protection of the people of the state of Oregon, that is would support their general policing rather than, you know, focus on the public highways, but also give the more general policing area. I would argue to have less restriction in this, since this room, this is the Constitution that we're talking about, and not statutes, and that to encourage you to think about striking the percentage in terms of and give some flexibility to the legislature here to make some decisions. Because I think in terms of the pressures that we have, I think we would increase troopers if we could use the trust fund dollars. I mean, I don't think the cuts would have been made over time if that constitutional provision hadn't been there. And I don't think anybody's going to sit there and use the entire trust fund for state troopers. But in terms of, I don't know what the future is going to be, and I don't know what 1%, you know, 10 years from now is going to be, and what that's going to mean, our ability to provide policing services. And so I think in terms of, where it may be fine, and we're thinking about we can put some box and we're going to protect ourselves from ourselves, but I think in terms of the legislators, you know, I think we're reasonable and we'll compromise and we'll make the best decision we can based upon the information we have, and I don't think that this is going to, by not having a percentage cap on the dollars, is going to force a shift in how the dollars are spent, but I think it would give us some flexibility. And I think in terms of, I would argue, since it's in the Constitution, let's not be putting these prescriptions in terms of how we make decisions, but I think it'll allow us to have sort of ample debate in the legislature as to what is appropriate, and it may change from session to session to session, and I think that's okay. But to sit there and put a percentage may put us in a box at some point in the future that none of us want to be in.
Thanks. I also think Representative Tom's point must be in here. I couldn't agree with you more, because I read just the opposite of you. That just proves how we understand it. I think the parks have got enough money, and that's what's just to make sure they have a really steady funding. So that your point will take it, and that should be in here. So we need some language like that, I personally feel. I'm sure we're talking in the same street. Did you have some comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, as far as going to state troopers, the reason that language was in there was that we had a talk with a number of law enforcement agencies, and we just didn't want to step on the toes of the jurisdiction of like the county or you know, another type of law enforcement area. And so that was why, you know, the words patrol, state patrols was in there.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, no, I don't disagree in terms of having the focus in terms of the dollars, and I understand the competition between everybody, but in terms of, I guess my concern is in terms of putting the percentage point in, and but also giving the flexibility that they do other things besides just state highways, and that they are there to back up, and they have other responsibilities in different areas of the state, and that by putting that there, it would force the legislature to have two pots of money, and then then the department would have to manage that these are constitutional trust fund dollars and these are general fund dollars, and that trooper is, you know, this percentage. And I think it would open up a huge can of worms as to, was I arrested by someone who was funded from this
and I'm working on a highway, and none of us want to be there.
Thank you. We have some other people, three more signed up. Maybe they can help us down this avenue. Thank you both very much for coming.
Mr. Chairman, could I just say one more thing? One more comment?
Mm-hmm.
About the, you will probably, you and Representative Hill and the other representatives will probably come up with some language to take care of that problem. I have full confidence in that. The only part that I was trying to point out was the competition between the two different law enforcement agencies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We have three state police people here. Would you like to come up together or independently? We have a Ron Anderson with us. If you'd like to come up, that's fine. And whoever you have with you. We also have Ben Rader and Greg with us. If you'd like to come up together, it might be easier.
Chairman and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Ron Anderson. I'm the Vice President of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. HJR 59 would provide trust fund revenues for Oregon State Police for the policing of our public highways. We are grateful and appreciative of the fact that 100 additional troopers were added in next year's biennium. However, that's far short of our staffing needs. Since the Department of State Police was funding was removed from the Oregon Department of Transportation in 1980 by the voters of Oregon, our department has been on a downhill journey. Shortly after being placed in the general fund, our department was receiving approximately 2.52 cents of every general fund dollar. Today we receive 1.6 cents of every general fund dollar, and we are a much larger agency than we were 5 years ago. Statistics were already told to you by Representative Gianola. I won't go into those, but I do want to point out that all of us are driving Oregon's highways and see the outrageous and crazy things that the motorists are doing today. With less and less law enforcement presence, the boldness and thoughts of I can get away with this appear to be commonplace. Mm-hmm. One only need to drive north into our neighboring state of Washington to see the difference in driving habits. You only need to count the number of troopers between the border and Seattle to figure out the reason for that. You can drive the entire length of Oregon on Interstate 5 and not see more than two or three troopers at a time, and that's if you're lucky. You can drive the entire width of Oregon on Interstate 84 and, again, only see two or three troopers. And, again, from corner to corner or diagonally across the street, and, again, you're lucky if you see two or three troopers. The department's community-based gap analysis budget shows that we are in need of 416 more troopers. The personal allocation model, or commonly known as PAM, shows that we are in need of 340 more troopers than we have today. We didn't run the numbers, however, I believe that if our budget was still operating at 2.52 cents for every general fund dollar, we wouldn't be here pleading for new troopers today. My desire and request to you is that your troopers protect our families each day by performing a variety of tasks to receive the help they need. It's just not about getting the job done. Also, as Ms. Gianola described, it's also about officer safety. Having to wait 30 minutes or more for backup units to arrive in a serious situation should not be acceptable to the state of Oregon, as it's not accepted by other police agencies. And one example is Senior Trooper Doug Larson from the Burns office has stated on a frequent basis members of that office make contact with people who have been trained not to contact individually, but for the public safety, they're required to do that anyway. In these situations, more likely than not, help is at least 30 minutes away and the time is 2 hours away. 30 minutes, let alone 2 hours, is placing an officer in a situation that they should not be in. I'd like to take this opportunity to say thank you for your concern and continuing support, and also for the kind comments made by the representative. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate you waiting us out, too. It's been a long morning.
Thank you.
Now we have two others. Harvey Glenn, would you like to go ahead?
Certainly, sir. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Glenn Rader, and I am representing a grassroots organization called Help Our Troopers. I am also a retired member of the Oregon State Police. Help Our Troopers was founded in 1995 by Lloyd and Lolita Clodfelter from Medford, Oregon. After their son, Brett, a state trooper assigned to Klamath Falls was murdered while on duty. The goal of the organization is to increase the Oregon State Police Patrol Division by 200 troopers in 1999. We are here today to speak in favor of HJR 59. This measure would allow the Oregon State Police to use dollars from the highway fund for policing of the highway. This is an appropriate use of these dollars to provide the third leg of the formula for safe highways. We already have good engineering, and we have the education components in place. The enforcement is not. I could go on and tell you about the reductions to the Oregon State Police Patrol Division in the last 19 years, but you already know that. With the intent to raise the speed limit, coupled with the increase in vehicles, drivers, population, and our ever-expanding tourist industry, if you do not have a trooper that is visible patrolling the highways of our state, the incidence of crime and road rage are going to increase. The danger to the men and women that wear the uniform and drive the marked patrol car has increased since I became a trooper in 1970. This danger is reflected throughout all segments of our society, from the home, the schools, the workplace. The fact that these dedicated professionals are working in some areas with virtually no backup is unacceptable. Their safety to perform their jobs are the responsibility of all of us. Is it appropriate to use highway dollars for enforcement? Absolutely. The word policing was not removed from the Constitution in 1980 because it was not appropriate. It was removed because in the 70s there was a gas shortage nationwide. This reduced gas tax revenues from being collected at a federal and state level. And because of this, no highways were being built and potholes were not being filled. Policing was removed to allow ODOT to utilize those diminishing funds for roads. This is the 90s, almost the year 2000. And in 19 years, financial situations change. This has been the case for our highways, for our highway safety. It is now appropriate, it is now the appropriate time to pass this measure and return policing to our highways. HJR is not just a good thing to do, it's the right thing to do. That concludes my testimony, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Okay, and I'm sure we'll have some questions, but we also have some other testimony here from Greg. We would like to go into work session, so maybe you could paraphrase some of this too as we move along.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Captain Greg Williford. I am the director of the Uniform Patrol Services Division for the Department of Oregon State Police, and I did provide some formal testimony there that has quite a bit of detail in there for you to look at your leisure, and I'll just paraphrase and summarize my testimony. On behalf of the Department of Oregon State Police and the Superintendent's Office, I appear here today before you in support of this House Print Resolution that would return policing and patrol activities as a funding option for the legislature from the State Highway Trust Fund. You've heard about the decline that we have suffered since we were removed from the trust fund 19 years ago. The general fund obligation that it became when we were removed from the trust fund peaked in about 1985 for your uniformed troopers out there, and today it is at its lowest percentage since we were removed and since it became a general funding obligation. It is today about 0.65% of the entire general fund that goes toward funding your uniformed Oregon State troopers in the patrol division today, and that's the lowest it's been. To be quite candid, the current staffing levels that we have today in Uniform Patrol Division are unacceptable to effectively meet the community's needs and expectations for state police uniform services, and also the needs and expectations of our local public safety partners that we work with day to day. Since 1931, your Oregon State Uniform Troopers have been responsible for providing a full-service law enforcement function within the patrol division and function of the Oregon State Police. They have involved in the area of transportation safety, response to crime and criminal law enforcement, response to natural disasters, and also support to both local communities and local law enforcement. That mission continues today, but as an agency, we are struggling to be able to meet all the obligations that we have. Just in transportation alone, transportation safety alone, it's difficult to really provide a good, strong enforcement leg of that three-legged stool of education, enforcement, and engineering. It's just very, very difficult to do today.
Thank you, Reverend Wells.
Can any of you update tell me what the current general fund budget for the state place is?
$200 million, $140 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, currently under the governor's recommended budget, the general fund for the agency-wide is $166 million for a biennium. Of that, the patrol division is at $67.4 million for a two-year biennial period. So, Mr. Chair, as this is currently written, then that would be money to support the 67 or replace the $67 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, if I could give a quick summary of where we are with our budget and where we would anticipate this, the money coming from the trust fund, where that would come from, would be to support our resource gap of 316 additional positions that are unfunded. We, 2 days ago, had a due pass recommendation for our budget in Ways and Means. And within that budget, there's 100 general fund crucial positions in that. We see that as a first step to filling the total service gap of 416. That would leave 350. So for long-range stable funding options, we would look to try to fill that remaining gap. One option before this body, of course, would be to fund the portion or the entire portion of the patrol division from the trust fund. That's certainly a policy option for the body to consider.
How many dollars are we talking about then?
Mr. Chair,
what would be the impact on the highway trust fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, to fund the 316 remaining positions that have been identified in the community need, it's about $52 million. That is a full phase-in of 24 months in the biennial period with no other fund leverage. Obviously, that would be driven down as you phase them in over time. But once they were fully phased in and funded for a full biennium, $52 million for 316 troopers.
Thank you. When you were here some time ago, you don't happen to remember how the original language was in the Constitution.
Yes, sir, I do. If you go back and look at, and I don't have Senate Bill 59, but if you look where it says construction, reconstruction, improvement, repair, maintenance, operation, we deleted the word and put use and policing of the highways. And that's all it said. It just said policing of the highways. And with that, we were able to do all of the things that Representative Hill alluded to, that when we had to go off the highway, that was one of those things that was expected of us to do. And it didn't get convoluted in the fact of, are they general funded or are they dedicated dollar funded? Because back then, all of the patrol division, most of the department was dedicated funded. It came out of primarily the highway trust fund. Even some detectives back then were funded, I think, through the highway trust fund. I would, and I heard Representative Gianelli say she was open to change. I believe taking the percentages off would be a good idea. And I would recommend that the change to the bill would be improvement, repair, maintenance, operation, use, and policing by the Oregon State Police. And policing by the Oregon State Police, and then of public highways, roads, streets, roadside. And I've had this conversation with legislative council as late as Wednesday, because there's a companion bill in the Senate that is similar to this. And that's how we worded that particular bill, because it was clean, it was very precise, and it's not going to convolute percentages or how much money and things like that.
For the benefit of the committee, if we want to move this bill, we need to move it to revenue, I personally would like to see us move it to revenue. They can do some other work there. That's not sending it across the building. That's keeping it in our own confines. And they need to get it as soon as they can, so I'd like to clean it up so we all feel comfortable knowing that there could be some more work with Rusty Strobeck and his committee. Mr. Jefferson Hill.
Mr. Chair, from the politics of trying to put this on the ballot and get it passed, it may be good to have this the subsection rather than just the word. That is a nice statement that people can read and understand what it's for. I would argue that if you just add the and protection of the people of the state of Oregon after the road to address areas and then strike the rest of that sentence in terms of the percentages and then include it under revenue.
Does the committee feel thoughtful of that language?
I like that language.
Okay. With all due respect, we'll close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 59. We'll open the work session on House Joint Resolution 59. And Representative Hill, would you like to make your comments again, and then we can have some other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would move to conceptually amend House Joint Resolution 59 on line 22, striking the first and replacing it with a comma. And then after the roadside rest areas, insert and protection of the people of the state of Oregon, period, and then striking the rest of the sentence.
Pretty comfortable, and you guys see your heads okay as far as is there any further discussion?
The only thing that I would like to point out is with regards to the intent. And as far as adding to general fund dollars or if this is a replacement. Again, as long as we built a record, then my intention would be that this is not a replacement for general fund dollars, but is in addition to.
I would think that's my intent, too. Can we think of a one-liner to put in there, somebody, to continue this conceptual amendment?
Chairman, I think that maybe that Representative Campbell had it on the head, as long as it stated very clear legislative intent on the record, you could probably call that the right to.
Okay, then it's very clear. Clear from me, clear from you.
Clear from me.
Clear from me. So the committee, all 10 of us, feel that that's what we want to do with this. And is that on the tape, Brad? Thank you.
Okay. Sure, if you take off that percent, then you're not talking about how many dollars are we talking about. Using some of those money, it doesn't say how many.
Correct.
Yeah. That's a good I'm still a little confused here of how we word this so that we how we fund completely maybe a certain section of the Oregon State Police, whether it's Highway Division at $52 million or what. I don't know how you ever control the fact, and it's the same way it happened on Measure 66. If we use designated funds, how we ever control the legislature and what they do with the general fund. I don't know how you ever write that kind of language. That eludes me.
Mr. Hill had his hand up. Maybe he has an answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I agree with you. I don't think you can. And I think we could sit here all day trying to figure out the wording, how to direct that. I think in terms of we just have to leave it to the next legislature. If the voters of the state adopt this, that we will do the best job possible to ensure the intent that we want one more troopers on the road, and this will provide us a mechanism to do that. Whether we do 100% out of trust fund dollars or 5% out of trust fund dollars, I think that is the decision that's best left to future legislators, because that's going to be a financial decision based upon the issues at that time.
Janet, do you have the conceptual amendment written down as Representative Hill stated it?
Mr. Chair, I do, and I'll read the sentence.
You can repeat it and look at it again.
The sentence will then read, it shall be, may also be used by the Oregon State Police for the policing of public highways, roads, streets, roadside rest areas, and protection of the people of the state of Oregon, period.
Does the committee feel comfortable enough sending this to revenue? And if we feel uncomfortable, we can set before that committee. Yes. Having said that, we have before us the conceptual amendment of House Joint Resolution 59, as stated by Janet. Is there any opposition to the adoption of the conceptual amendment, Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Resolution 59, conceptually amended to the Committee on Revenue.
Second.
Thank you. Do that recommendation.
This is Hill. Move House Joint Resolution 59 as conceptually amended to the Revenue Committee. Do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Janet, you're holding a note up.
No.
You're okay. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Crump?
Aye.
Representative Crummel?
Aye.
Representative Lean?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Taylor?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wells?
Yes.
Hi. House Joint Resolution 59 is moving to revenue. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
For waiting
thank you.
For the benefit of the committee, that we do have before us an envelope to fill out and get back to Jim, the manager of policy research and committee. It's a little thing for Janet. And other than that, we are adjourned. Have a nice weekend. I'll see you all Monday.